Fed arrogance. The arrogance of the Fed today is such that its board members refuse to even reveal what they have done with this nation's wealth. The amounts of wealth involved are staggering, both in losses, bailouts, and unaccounted for funds. In mid-May 2009, Federal Reserve Inspector General Elizabeth A. Coleman stunned a congressional panel by verifying that her office could not account for $9 trillion worth of off-balance sheet transactions made by the Fed between September 2008 and May 2009. "We're actually conducting a fairly high-level review of the various lending facilities collectively," she said. She added that she could not provide any information on those investigations and that she had no authority to look into Fed practices, but only to oversee the Federal Reserve's Board of Governors. Her inability to answer questions regarding the missing taxpayer funds prompted Florida Democratic Representative Alan Grayson to state, "I am shocked to find out that nobody at the Federal Reserve, including the Inspector General, is keeping track of this." Even the Fed chairman apparently wasn't keeping an eye on the store. On July 21, 2009, Grayson confronted Fed Chairman Ben Bernanke concerning the whereabouts of more than half a trillion dollars that the Fed had made as credit swaps with foreign banks. Bernanke's response, "I don't know." Many Americans saw the Fed's economic recklessness as nothing less than an attempt by the financial rulemakers to break the rules for themselves and their cronies in order to privatize profits and socialize losses. Americans were also concerned about the Federal Reserve System's great power over American monetary policy. Despite this concern, and despite his desire to see the Fed audited, Barney Frank, the chairman of the Financial Services Committee, and others in Congress have suggested that the Fed supervise the entire U.S. monetary system. A number of financial analysts disagreed. "I have intense concerns with the Fed as a regulator," said economist William K. Black. "Fed regulators have no power within the institution, and the institution is inherently hostile to vigorous regulatory action against the big banks." Conrad de Quadros, a former economist at fallen investment giant Bear Stearns, agreed with Black's point, writing, "There were obviously some significant lapses at the Fed, so widening their regulatory authority isn't really what the system needs." The Reuters news agency put the usual mild spin on the economist's criticisms by stating in an April 2009 article, "Yet given the institution's opaqueness and its failure to prevent the current financial crisis, critics say the country would not be well served if the central bank were anointed as an all-powerful supra-regulator." Opaqueness is an understatement. In November 2008, the Worldwide Financial Information Network, Bloomberg, filed suit against the Fed under the Freedom of Information Act after the central bank refused to disclose details concerning 11 Fed-created lending programs that paid out more than $2 trillion in U.S. taxpayer money. Not only did Fed officials decline to say who received this staggering amount of money, but they also would not detail what assets the Fed had accepted as collateral. Bloomberg LP, majority owned by New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg, sued on behalf of its Bloomberg News unit. The Fed responded to Bloomberg by reiterating its non-government standing and claiming that although it had found 231 pages of records on the transactions, it was allowed to withhold such information as trade secrets and commercial information. Fed officials further argued the United States is facing an unprecedented crisis in which loss in confidence in and between financial institutions can occur with lightning speed and devastating effects. The Bloomberg Freedom of Information Act suit had argued that knowing what collateral was received in exchange for public money is central to understanding and assessing the government's response to the most cataclysmic financial crisis in America since the Great Depression. However, in an email response to Bloomberg News, Jennifer J. Johnson, secretary for the Fed's Board of Governors, wrote, "It is considered judgment, and in view of certain circumstances, it would be a dangerous step to release this otherwise confidential information." Various internet wags have suggested the "don't delay us with questions or the whole economy will collapse" tactic has been used all too frequently to stall or prevent public scrutiny of financial wrongdoing. If they told us what they held, we would know the potential losses that the government may take, and that's what they don't want us to know, explained Carlos Mendez, a senior managing director at New York's global private investment house ICP Capital LLC. In late August 2009, Manhattan Chief U.S. District Judge Loretta Preska rejected the Fed's argument of confidentiality and ordered the central bank to disclose details of the emergency loans. New Jersey Republican Representative Scott Garrett wrote that Preska's decision was strikingly good news. This is what the American people have been asking for. But because Judge Preska's decision is expected to be appealed by the Fed, there is now more reason for the central bank to be audited. Perhaps the reason more Americans are not upset by the financial improprieties today has something to do with what they ingest. Debilitating food and water. Nazi German chemists worked out a very ingenious and far-reaching plan of mass control that was submitted to and adopted by the German General Staff. This plan was to control the population of any given area through mass medication of drinking water supplies. The real reason behind water fluoridation is not to benefit children's teeth. The real purpose behind water fluoridation is to reduce the resistance of the masses to domination and control and loss of liberty. Charles Elliot Perkins, U.S. chemist sent to reconstruct the IG Farben chemical empire after World War II. It is both paradoxical and tremendously ironic that the American public has more unlimited access to healthy food than any population in human history. Long after World War II, a banana was considered a costly delicacy in England. Yet Americans are, on average, unhealthy, obese, and over-medicated. Many nutritionists believe the problem lies not only in the quantity of food consumed, but the quality as well. Bad food and smart choices. By 2010, the food industry tried to bolster its responsibility with a new front-of-pack nutrition labeling program called Smart Choices. According to the food industry, the program was designed so that shoppers could make smarter food and beverage choices within product categories in every supermarket aisle. The Smart Choices website said the program was motivated by the need for a single, trusted, and reliable front-of-pack nutrition labeling program that U.S. food manufacturers and retailers could voluntarily adopt to help guide consumers in making smarter food and beverage choices. According to the program's website, to qualify for the Smart Choices program, a product must meet a comprehensive set of nutrition criteria based on the Dietary Guidelines for Americans and other sources of nutrition science and authoritative dietary guidance. The Smart Choices program covers food and beverages in 19 distinct product categories, including cereals, meats, fruits, vegetables, dairy, and snacks, allowing shoppers to compare similar products. Critics, such as syndicated columnist and former Texas Agricultural Commissioner Jim Hightower, claim the program is nothing less than an industry scam, created and paid for by such outfits as Coca-Cola, ConAgra, General Mills, Kellogg's, Kraft, and PepsiCo. Under this handy consumer program, hundreds of approved food products in your supermarket are getting a bold green checkmark printed right on the front of the package, along with the reassuring phrase, "Smart Choices." No need to read those tedious lists of ingredients on the back, for the simple green checkmark is henceforth your guarantee of nutritional yumminess. For example, you'll find it on such items as Fruit Loops and Fudgesicle Bars, groused Hightower. But even by industry standards, this is goofy. I mean, come on, Fruit Loops? A serving of this stuff is 41% sugar. That's a heavier dose than if you fed cookies to your kids for breakfast. Wow, talk about setting a low bar for nutritional quality. Indeed, food manufacturers can slap a Smart Choice label on a product just by adding some vitamin C to it, even if the product also contains caffeine, saccharin, and chemical additives known to cause cancer and other diseases. That's not smart. It's stupid and deceptive. Deceptive or just shrewd business? And do others do better or worse for eating non-nutritious food? A recent issue of the journal Cancer Causes and Control reported that a 1996 through 2003 study of Ohio's Amish community showed significantly lower incidences of cancer. The Amish, known for their horse-drawn wagons and simple diets, are far healthier than the rest of the American population. An inadequate diet diminishes the ability of the body to fight disease and leads to lingering illness and even death. This plays well into the globalists' scheme to reduce the human population, as shall be seen. And they control the corporate food industry, along with the mass media. False claims and recalls. Sometimes even a manufacturer's standard marketing presentation leads to legal action. In early 2009, the Coca-Cola Company was notified of a class action lawsuit filed by the Center for Science in the Public Interest, the CSPI, that claimed the company made deceptive and unsubstantiated claims on its vitamin water line of beverages. Coke markets vitamin water as a healthful alternative to soda by labeling its several flavors with such health buzzwords as defense, rescue, energy, and endurance, stated a CSPI news release, which pointed out that the company makes a wide range of dramatic claims, including that its drinks variously reduce the risk of chronic disease, reduce the risk of eye disease, promote healthy joints, and support optimal immune function. However, CSPI nutritionists claim the 33 grams of sugar in each bottle of vitamin water do more to promote obesity, diabetes, and other health problems than the vitamins in the drink do to perform the advertised benefits listed on the bottles. CSPI also criticized Miller Coors in the wake of a previous settlement with competitor Anheuser-Busch over advertising for new beverages directed toward the youth market. CSPI described Miller Coors' Sparks as an alcoholic energy drink that contained stimulant additives that are not approved for use in alcoholic drinks, including caffeine, taurine, ginseng, and guarana. Often called Alcospeed, Sparks contains more alcohol than beer, according to CSPI, which added, "No studies support the safety of consuming those stimulants and alcohol together, but new research does indicate young consumers of these types of drinks are more likely to binge drink, become injured, ride with an intoxicated driver, or be taken advantage of sexually, than drinkers of conventional alcoholic drinks." Following a settlement with 13 state attorneys general, Miller Coors agreed to remove stimulants from Sparks. Many people still feel that the food they prepare from a supermarket or local grocery must be safe. After all, doesn't the federal government assure it's safe? In 1993, more than 500 people were sickened and 4 died in the Northwest from E. coli 0157H7, then termed hamburger disease, because it was found in undercooked beef. This particular pathogen, however, was found in other foods, including salami, lettuce, apple cider, and even raw milk, and it, as well as similar infectious bacteria, can survive and even multiply at refrigerator temperatures. A public outcry resulted, with the U.S. Department of Agriculture, the USDA, issuing its Pathogen Reduction Hazard and Analysis and Critical Control Points, or HACCP, rules in 1996. Under these regulations, the food industry was given the responsibility of ensuring the safety of its products. The government only had to verify this was being done. In 2008-2009, a wide variety of food items were recalled for potential salmonella contamination. These recalls included everything from snacks, cakes, candy, seafood, and dips, to vegetables, fruits, eggs, meats, infant formula, and mouth rinse. An extensive listing of recalled products is available at www.recalls.org/food.html. Eating on the run may help explain the rise in both cases and concern over tainted or unsafe food. In the United States, 2 out of 3 people ate their main meal away from home at least once a week in 1998. According to a 1997 study entitled Impact of Changing Consumer Lifestyles on the Emergence and Reemergence of Foodborne Pathogens, a typical consumer more than 8 years old ate food away from the home at least 4 times per week. It also reported that half of each food dollar spent by Americans went to food prepared outside the home. The nation's growing dependence on prepared food means that by the time consumers eat the food, it has been transported numerous times, cooked and cooled, and touched by many different people. Each step in processing could increase the risk of pathogens. Although food once was grown and distributed locally in America, today large corporations produce food in centralized facilities and ship nationally and internationally, which means that a processing mistake will be felt nationwide or all over the world instead of just locally. Improper holding temperatures, inadequate cooking, contaminated equipment, food from unsafe sources, and poor personal hygiene by packagers can all lead to foodborne illnesses. According to Answers.com, in 1998, Sara Lee recalled 35 million pounds of hot dogs and lunch meat due to the presence of listeria. This is food contamination on a scale unprecedented a generation ago, stated the site. It's enough to make even a glutton think twice about the food he or she eats. Growing hormones. Recently, genetically modified food crops using growth hormones have come under increasing scrutiny for causing health irregularities. Monsanto first synthesized the hormone in large quantities in 1994, utilizing recombinant DNA technology. Cattle now are routinely given growth hormones to make them gain weight faster, thus reducing both the time and feed required prior to slaughtering. Regulation of these hormones is not possible because it is impossible to tell the difference between the added hormones and those made by the animal's own body. Since the introduction of artificial growth hormones, several reports have shown that boys are growing pubic hair and girls are developing breasts at younger ages than in the past. According to the official journal of the American Academy of Pediatrics, studies in the United States have shown an earlier onset of puberty in recent decades, and there is evidence that the onset of puberty is changing, possibly related to environmental exposure to endocrine-disrupting chemicals that mimic estrogen in the body. It is hormone signals from the brain that trigger the onset of puberty. Some experts argue that such premature puberty is merely the result of cosmetics and the desire for kids to emulate favorite celebrities. However, this does not explain why premature puberty has been noted in the United States and not in Europe. According to a May 2009 study cited in the New York Times, which added, "This discrepancy has led to speculation that the changes observed in the United States may really be due to differences in data collection methods among large-scale studies and changing ethnic demographics in that country." But such rationalization fails to mention growth hormones. Has the use of growth hormones in beef and milk-producing cattle escaped the consideration of these researchers? If the hormones will increase growth in the cows, it surely must promote accelerated growth in humans. In a recent report based on a 15-year study of young girls in Denmark, researchers determined that the average age of breast development has begun a full year earlier compared with girls studied in the early 1990s. This may mean that as the use of growth hormones spreads, so does the accelerating maturation of youngsters. This may not be just another conspiracy theory as, according to the New York Times, studies have documented that a number of chemicals, such as bisphenol A, used to make hard, clear plastic containers, may act as endocrine disruptors and have estrogenic effects on the body. Few large epidemiological studies have been conducted to determine whether early puberty is associated with growth hormone-treated foods, and some that have, such as a study of recombinant bovine growth hormone, or RBGH, were done by the manufacturer. So, no clear connection has been established between chemicals having estrogenic effects and premature puberty. It is reminiscent of how the cigarette industry once fought health studies over the hazards of smoking. Concerns over food safety can be dated back to 1902, when USDA chemists found that food preservatives contained harmful chemicals, a discovery that added to growing public concern. In 1906, the Pure Food and Drug Act and the Federal Meat Inspection Act were passed in an effort to assure the public that the government was attempting to protect them from impure foods and drugs. But then, in 1933, Arthur Callett and F.J. Schlink published 100 Million Guinea Pigs: Dangers in Everyday Foods, Drugs, and Cosmetics, a popular book attacking the 1906 Food and Drug Act and stating that the federal government was incapable of protecting the public from unsafe food and drugs due to incompetence and ineffective laws. The authors stated their book was written in the interest of the consumer who does not yet realize that he is being used as a guinea pig. Noting the close connections between the government and the giant corporations that produce both the nation's food and drugs, they foresaw that if the poison is such that it acts slowly and insidiously, perhaps over a long period of years, then we poor consumers must be test animals all our lives. And when, in the end, the experiment kills us a year or 10 years sooner than otherwise we would have died, no conclusions can be drawn, and 100 million others are available for further tests. The rise of the FDA. Due to the popularity of Callett and Schlink's book, as well as federal whistleblowers speaking out publicly, the mass media that tended to stand with the corporations was bypassed, leading to demands that action be taken to safeguard food and drug consumption. The result was passage of the Federal Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act, the FDCA, of 1938. Today, this act is considered the foundation of government food and drug regulation. It was meant to be enforced by the Food and Drug Administration, which was created in 1927 when existing federal offices were combined. The FDCA expanded the definition of contamination to include harmful bacteria or chemicals and allowed the FDA to inspect food manufacturing and processing facilities and monitor animal drugs, feeds, and veterinary devices. The Act also required ingredients of non-standard foods to be listed on labels, prohibited the sale of food prepared under unsanitary conditions, and authorized mandatory standards for foods, such as setting the allowable amount of rat feces in foodstuffs. Some claimed such legislation was not enough. According to a citizen petition to the USDA, filed by the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine in 2001, the prevalence of foodborne illnesses in this country caused by eating fecally contaminated meat and poultry remains staggeringly high, providing clear evidence that current inspection methods and regulations are insufficient and misdirected. The petition claimed that current inspection policies pertained only to that feces which is visible to the naked eye and does not protect consumers from unseen particulates. Further promises of public protection came in August 1996 with passage of the Food Quality Protection Act, the FQPA, that allowed the Environmental Protection Agency, the EPA, to regulate pesticides used in the food production. However, the FQPA also eliminated the 1958 Delaney Clause to the 1938 law that prohibited even tiny amounts of any cancer-causing substance added to food products. The Delaney Clause, an amendment named after New York Democratic Congressman James Delaney, had set a fixed risk standard of zero cancer risk for pesticide residue in food. Whereas the FQPA softened this to a mere reasonable certainty that no harm would result from any type of exposure, including drinking water. Some saw the hand of the corporate globalists in this move to lessen public protection. One method to protect corporate interests is to fill government posts with persons connected to both sides. One prime example of the revolving door between government regulation and corporate foodstuffs is Michael Taylor, who was named President Obama's new deputy commissioner for foods at the FDA in early 2010. Fresh out of law school in 1976, Taylor began his career as an FDA staff attorney. He then moved to the law firm of King and Spalding, which represented Monsanto as it was developing genetically engineered bovine growth hormone, or BGH. Returning to the FDA in 1991 as deputy commissioner for policy, Taylor, while instituting tougher anti-contamination measures for foods, supported the FDA decision to approve Monsanto's bovine growth hormone. He also was partly responsible for a controversial policy permitting milk from BGH-treated cows not to be labeled as such. Taylor then moved to the U.S. Agricultural Department in 1994 to oversee its food safety program before returning to work for Monsanto as a vice president for public policy. After a time at George Washington University in July 2009, Taylor became an advisor to the FDA commissioner. Genetically modified foods. Another public concern has been over non-traditional genetically modified organisms, or GMOs, in foods. Such organisms have had their genes altered by scientists in a laboratory to help the crop resist weeds, insects, and diseases, increase its nutrients, or lengthen its shelf life. Beginning in 2006, more than 1,200 lawsuits were filed against Bayer Crop Science AG, claiming damages caused by the firm's genetically modified, or GM, rice seeds. Although the rice was not approved for human consumption, Bayer, along with Louisiana State University, had been testing the rice for resistance to the company's Liberty herbicide. Farmers in five states claimed that the modified rice had escaped and contaminated commercial rice supplies in more than 30% of America's rice lands. When the USDA announced that trace amounts of the GM rice had been found in U.S. long-grain rice stocks, there was a 14% decline in rice futures, which meant lower prices paid for crops. Growers claimed this cost them $150 million. Bayer did not keep track of its genetically modified seed, argued attorneys for the rice growers. This is a living, growing organism. That's why you have to be so careful. But a major focal point of concern for the debate over GMOs is Monsanto. Headquartered in Crèvecœur, Missouri, this multinational agricultural biotechnology corporation is the world's leading producer of GM seeds as well as pesticides. In 2005, Monsanto was reaching into other areas of food. The company applied for two patents with the World Intellectual Property Organization, or WIPO, in Geneva for exclusive ownership of GM pigs. If these patents are granted, Monsanto can legally prevent breeders and farmers from breeding pigs whose characteristics are described in the patent claims or force them to pay royalties, warned Greenpeace researcher Christopher Thenn. It's a first step toward the same kind of corporate control of an animal line that Monsanto is aggressively pursuing with various grain and vegetable lines. Some semblance of sanity was brought to this issue on March 29, 2010, when U.S. District Court Judge Robert W. Sweet struck down two patents on human genes that had been linked to ovarian and breast cancer. This decision sent a chill through the multi-billion-dollar corporations that today claim patent rights on about 20% of human genes. Judge Sweet's 152-page decision, involving gene patents of the Myriad Genetics Company, stated the patents were improperly granted as they involved a law of nature. He agreed with gene patent opponents who argued that the idea that isolating a gene made it patentable was merely a lawyer trick that circumvents the prohibition of the direct patenting of the DNA in our bodies, but which in practice reaches the same result. Some researchers see Monsanto as attempting to dictate what farmers will grow and what consumers will eat. The agricultural giant produces patented seeds, termed Terminator seeds, designed to not reproduce, meaning farmers each year will have to buy more Monsanto seeds. Several recent court cases involved Monsanto attorneys suing farmers who illegally, or even unknowingly, thanks to the winds, ended up with Monsanto's patented crops growing in their fields. Such activity has made Monsanto a prime target for anti-globalization and environmental activists. Interest in modifying genetic material increased after a March 2009 report was released that stated that South African farmers lost millions of dollars when 82,000 hectares of Monsanto GM corn failed to produce hardly any seeds. Although the manufacturer, Monsanto, offered compensation for the losses, Miriam Mayet, director of the Africa Center for Biosecurity in Johannesburg, demanded an immediate ban on all GM foods and a government investigation. But at least in this case, only crops were lost. During 2008, an underreported epidemic took place in India, when thousands of desperate farmers were driven to suicide when they could not get out of debt. While Monsanto claimed that their weevil-resistant cotton would produce larger crops, they failed to mention that they would require much more water, an ingredient in short supply. In 2003, more than 17,000 Indian farmers had committed suicide. The numbers have simply grown ever since, creating both mystery and controversy. Although the suicides were caused primarily by bankruptcy, many believe these bankruptcies in part came as a result of the promotion of Monsanto GM seeds. Though the suicide epidemic seems complex to those studying it, there has been more and more scrutiny directed at the role of the World Trade Organization, the WTO, and the biochemical firm Monsanto. Curiously, the suicides began around 1998, the same year the WTO allowed corporate giants like Monsanto into India's seed market. Non-renewable genetically modified crops soon replaced the self-sustainable farming system that India had used for thousands of years. Farmers were obligated to purchase not only GM seed, but also the chemical pesticides produced by Monsanto for those crops. According to Jessica Long of Montreal's nonprofit Center for Research on Globalization, 75% of cultivable Indian land exists in dry zones. Non-GM rice utilizes 3,000 liters of water in order to produce 1 kilo, while non-renewable hybrid rice requires 5,000 liters per kilo. Continuous GM cotton crop failures resulted in the state of Andhra Pradesh, the seed capital of India, prohibiting the sales of Bacillus thuringiensis, a bacterium used as a pesticide, cotton varieties by Monsanto. Due to the ongoing controversy over the use of GM seeds, in 2008 the Indian government forced Monsanto to reduce royalties received from its patented seeds. The economic disparity of Indian farmers only increases as they try to keep up with the lowest import prices. It is estimated that they are losing $26 billion annually, stated Long. While 90% of farm loans come from moneylenders, they are charged anywhere from 36 to 50% interest, placing them in a cyclical mode of poverty. Surely poverty alone cannot be responsible for such massive amounts of bloodshed. After all, poverty has always existed. So what is it about current conditions that have led to all this bloodshed? The fact is that mass suicides have transformed these farmers into agrarian martyrs for peasants everywhere. Monsanto officials denied that their firm was behind the deaths, explaining on the company website, "The reality is that the tragic phenomena of farmer suicides in India began long before the introduction of Bolgard, Monsanto's herbicide, in 2002. Farmer suicide has numerous causes, with most experts agreeing that indebtedness is one of the main factors. Farmers unable to repay loans and facing spiraling interest often see suicide as the only solution. Although bankruptcy was the obvious cause of most of India's suicides, many blamed Monsanto's genetically modified crops, which required more water than traditional crops, as well as Monsanto's herbicides, for farmers' losses. By claiming global monopoly patent rights throughout the entire food chain, Monsanto seeks to make farmers and food producers and ultimately consumers entirely dependent and reliant on one single corporate entity for a basic human need. It's the same dependence that Russian peasants had on the Soviet government following the Russian Revolution. The same dependence that French peasants had on feudal kings during the Middle Ages. But control of a significant proportion of the global food supply by a single corporation would be unprecedented in human history, warned Brian Thomas Fitzgerald of Greenpeace. In January 2010, a study published in the International Journal of Biological Sciences reported that researchers, after analyzing the effects of genetically modified foods on mammalian health, linked Monsanto's GM corn to kidney and liver damage in rats. Monsanto officials were quick to state that the research was based on faulty analytical methods and reasoning and do not call into question the safety findings for these products. However, the study's author, Gilles-Éric Cerellini, responded, "Our study contradicts Monsanto conclusions because Monsanto systematically neglects significant health effects in mammals that are different in males and females eating GMOs, or not proportional to the dose. This is a very serious mistake, dramatic for public health. This is the major conclusion revealed by our work, the only careful reanalysis of Monsanto's crude statistical data." Awareness about GMOs in foods can be traced back as early as 2002. Although the FDA, EPA, and USDA all have stated that their research shows no long-term health risks from GMO foods, Dr. Stanley Ewan, a consultant histopathologist at Aberdeen Royal Infirmary and one of Scotland's leading experts in tissue diseases, warned in a report to a government health committee that eating GM food could cause cancer. In a report to a government health committee, Ewan expressed great concern about the use of the cauliflower mosaic virus as a promoter in GM foods that could increase the risk of stomach and colon cancers. Ewan wrote that the infectious virus is used like a tiny engine to drive implanted genes to express themselves and could encourage the growth of polyps in the stomach or colon. The faster and bigger the polyps grow, the more likely they are to be malignant, he wrote, adding, "It is possible cow's milk will contain GM derivatives that can be directly ingested by humans as milk or cheese. Even a lightly cooked, thick fillet steak could contain active GM material." Cancer was only one of some 50 harmful effects of GMO foods and growth hormones listed in a research article by nutritionist Nathan Battalion that included a warning from Harvard biology professor Dr. George Wald, a Nobel laureate in medicine. "Our morality up to now has been to go ahead without restriction to learn all that we can about nature. Restructuring nature was not part of the bargain. This direction may be not only unwise, but dangerous. Potentially, it could breed new animal and plant diseases, new sources of cancer, novel epidemics," stated Wald. Monsanto's growth hormone, IGF-1, has been linked to increased risk of human colorectal and breast cancer in studies both in the United States and Canada. However, the FDA downplayed the significance of such studies. Reflecting concern over the safety of GMOs, the UN's Food Safety Agency, representing 101 nations worldwide, in 1999 ruled unanimously to continue a 1993 European moratorium on Monsanto's genetically engineered hormonal milk, RBGH. This ban was not reported in the American media, further indicating the extent of Monsanto's influence in the media. Award-winning journalists Steve Wilson and Jane Acree both were fired when they tried to expose the cover-up of such studies as well as the ban on growth hormones in Europe. According to the Goldman Environmental Prize website, as investigative reporters for the Fox television affiliate in Tampa, Florida, Wilson and Acree discovered that while the hormone had been banned in Canada, Europe, and most other countries, millions of Americans were unknowingly drinking milk from RBGH-treated cows. The duo documented how the hormone, which can harm cows, was approved by the government as a veterinary drug without adequately testing its effects on children and adults who drink RBGH milk. They also uncovered studies linking its effects to cancer in humans. Just before broadcast, the station canceled the widely promoted reports after Monsanto, the hormone manufacturer, threatened Fox News with dire consequences if the stories aired. Under pressure from Fox lawyers, the husband and wife team rewrote the story more than 80 times. After threats of dismissal and offers of six-figure sums to drop their ethical objections and keep quiet, they were fired in December 1997. The addition of unsafe, even toxic, chemicals to food and water may be attributed to laxity and greed on the part of producers. But when coupled with the public statements of leading globalists concerning the desire to reduce the human population, which will be discussed later, it takes on a much darker aspect. Codex Alimentarius. One would think that a good diet with plenty of vitamins might help prevent diseases and malnutrition, but even here the New World Order may interfere. The World Health Organization, the WHO, was founded in 1948 with the goals of setting global standards of health and helping governments to strengthen national health programs. The WHO and the United Nations Food and Agricultural Organization, the FAO, work together in committees, conferences, and commissions. One of their most significant joint efforts is the Codex Alimentarius, Latin for Food Code, Commission, which sets standards for food commodities, codes for hygiene and technology, pesticide evaluations, and limits on pesticide residues. It also evaluates food additives and veterinary drugs and sets guidelines for contaminants. Approximately 170 nations accepted standards and codes. In recent years, controversy has grown over the application of food standards to traditional vitamins and mineral supplements. A major cause for concern by nutritionists is that the Codex Alimentarius list is recognized by the World Trade Organization, the WTO. It is feared that the WTO will use Codex Alimentarius standards in disputes over the classification of vitamins as food. Such fears are not irrational, since in 1996 the German delegation to the Codex Alimentarius Commission advocated a ban on herbs, vitamins, and minerals sold for preventative or therapeutic reasons, and advanced a position that supplements should be classified as drugs, with attendant restrictions and physician prescriptions. Though the Commission agreed, there was an aftermath of such public protest that passage of the new classifications was postponed. As protests waned in mid-2005, the Commission quietly adopted guidelines for vitamin and mineral food supplements, allowing member countries to regulate dietary supplements as drugs or other categories. Although the new classifications do not yet ban supplements outright, they do subject them to labeling and packaging requirements, set criteria for the setting of maximum and minimum dosage levels, and require that safety and efficacy are considered when determining ingredient sources. Should supplements become as inaccessible as prescription drugs, John Hamill, founder of International Advocates for Health Freedom, or the IAHF, believes that the average consumer will lose out on the benefits of simple remedies like herbs, vitamins, minerals, homeopathic remedies, and amino acids. The name of the game for Codex Alimentarius is to shift all remedies into the prescription category so they can be controlled exclusively by the medical monopoly and its bosses, the major pharmaceutical firms, said Hamill. Despite government denials that this could occur, the Codex Alimentarius proposals are today law in Norway and Germany, where the entire health food industry has literally been taken over by the drug companies. Hamill explained that in these countries, vitamin C above 200 milligrams is illegal as is vitamin E above 45 IU, vitamin B1 over 2.4 milligrams, and so on. The same is true of ginkgo and many other herbs, and only one government-controlled pharmacy has the right to import supplements as medicines, which they can sell to health food stores, convenience stores, or pharmacies, he added. Opponents paint the Codex Alimentarius Commission as a shady, secretive organization that is the thinly veiled propaganda arm of the international pharmaceutical industry that does everything it can to promote industry objectives whilst limiting individual options to maintain health, which would diminish members' profits. Behind the Codex Alimentarius Commission is the UN and the WHO. According to critics, both organizations are working for multinational pharmaceutical corporations and international banks whose owners support reducing the human population through such means as reducing the availability of necessary minerals in the human diet. This, in turn, could increase the occurrences of various debilitating diseases such as cancer and diabetes, the number three cause of death in adults in the United States. Citing a study at the University of Vancouver Medical School, neuropathic physician and author Dr. Joel D. Wallach indicated that vanadium, a soft, white, metallic element found in certain minerals, could replace insulin in adult-onset diabetics, a condition representing 85% of all diabetics. In a 2005 speech, Wallach said, "I've seen it work on hundreds and hundreds of people. Now, to me, this is criminal. If you write to Hill's Packing Company that makes science diet dog food, high-tech food for animals, and say, how many minerals exactly is in science diet dog food? They'll write back, there's 40 minerals. You write Checkerboard Square in St. Louis, Ralston Purina, and say, just how many minerals are in your rat pellets for laboratory rats? They'll say that there are 28 minerals. I'll give anybody a crisp new $100 bill if you can find me a human infant formula in a grocery store that has more than 11 minerals. So dogs get 40 minerals, rats get 28 minerals, and human infants get 11. Is that fair? No. Doesn't matter if you're talking about SMA, Similac, Isomilk, ProSoy B. In fact, that's why they call it Similac. Similac, because it lacks everything. While efforts in the United States to curtail vitamins and supplements have been stymied by public opposition, proponents found another ally in the Federal Trade Commission, the FTC, which has now made Codex a trade issue. At the Uruguay round of the General Agreement on Tariffs and Trade, or GATT, which created the World Trade Organization, the United States agreed to submit its laws to the international standards, which included the Codex Alimentarius Commission's standards for dietary supplements. What this means is that now Codex Alimentarius is enforced by the WTO, whose international standards could supersede domestic laws without the American people's consent or vote in the matter. According to Hamill, if a country disagrees with or refuses to follow Codex standards, the WTO can apply pressure by withdrawing trade privileges and imposing crippling trade sanctions. The WTO was established with the understanding that it was to push the world toward greater economic integration. However, according to many, the WTO has ended up politicizing trade by putting the stamp of officialdom on some very bad policies and promotes further loss of American sovereignty to supranational organizations. According to Llewellyn H. Rockwell, Jr., president and founder of the Ludwig von Mises Institute, the WTO has the power to order Congress to change any U.S. law the WTO deems a barrier to free trade. If Congress does not obey the WTO, then American businesses and consumers will face trade sanctions. Congress has already changed America's tax laws in response to WTO commands. It is possible that the WTO will force America to adopt the restrictive regulations of foods and dietary supplements endorsed by the UN's Codex Commission. Despite centuries of human experience with healing herbs and vitamins, Today's corporate medicine industry, especially the pharmaceutical giants that can be traced back to the Nazi IG Farben complex, has attempted to limit any healing agent to pharmaceuticals. Agents for this suppression of natural healing are the Food and Drug Administration and the Federal Trade Commission. Legitimate standardized codes for dietary supplements, such as Codex Alimentarius, require expensive clinical studies, research, tests, and analysis well beyond the financial reach of all but the largest corporations. In other words, a huge mound of personal narratives supporting natural remedies would be useless against a few reports from well-paid corporate scientists. In working to protect the business interests of vaccine manufacturers, the pharmaceutical corporations, both the FDA and FTC, have declared all-out war against any products that might offer consumers options other than vaccines, said Mike Adams, Natural News editor and self-styled Health Ranger, whose articles and books have attracted a worldwide audience of nearly 1 million people. The FDA's official position is that there is no such thing as any herb, any plant, any nutrient, or any dietary supplement that has any beneficial effect on the human body. Thus, no herb, plant, nutrient, or supplement can ever be approved by the FDA to protect against influenza. As you figured out, the whole game is rigged from the start. Herbs that have antiviral properties will never be approved as antivirals. And frankly, for the people running natural product companies, to try to play the FDA game is useless. You can never appease tyranny. Trying to conform to the requirements of the FDA and FTC is like Jewish prisoners trying to conform to the wishes of Hitler. You've been condemned from the start, said Adams.